Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com.
And today I think we have a pretty fascinating subject for you. Of course, we always have fascinating subjects, but altruism and altruism in the animal kingdom.
Yeah. Now, what is altruism, right?
Yeah.
This altruism is, quote, behavior that benefits others at the cost of the individual, unquote. All right. So in this, it's like, an example of this would be, the ultimate example of this is martyrdom, you know, in at least in human culture, where somebody lays down their life to save others.
Yes.
Most examples of martyrdom. Yeah. But like a situation like the GI jumping on a hand grenade.
Yeah. Yep. To save his buddy.
Yeah. He dies, but he saves his buddy. Altruism.
I tend to think of firemen a lot when it comes to altruism. I do have that classic image of hero, you know, they're racing into a burning building. But then could you argue that since a fireman, you know, that's part of his job, so is that really altruistic behavior? Perhaps not.
Yeah, that's the thing when you start you can really nitpick altruism and say, are you really – because it basically comes down to you're doing something good just to do something good, you know? But then people will say, well, did you really do that just to do something good or to feel good about doing something good, you know, or so that other people would see you and say, oh, look how good he is for, you know, laying his coat over the rain puddle so the lady could walk over it. You
know? Yeah. Josh Clark wrote a really good article about this. And it's on the website if you guys want to look it up. Is there such thing as a truly selfless act? And he brings up the classic Friends episode in which Phoebe says, yes, of course there is. And so she's thwarted at every turn. And you're frowning at me because why are we bringing up Friends?
No, I'm surprised that Josh used a Friends reference. I mean, not that I'm judging that. Josh always writes awesome articles, but, I didn't expect a Friends reference from Josh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes cool. Friends can bring you a little science and altruism, apparently. So the take home is that, Phoebe goes through all these different trials. She gets stung by a bee and she thinks she lets a bee sting her, which seems kind of silly. And she argues that this is an act of altruism because she has let the bee a stinger. But in the Friends episode, Joey argues that the bee will lose its stinger. So it's not actually benefiting the bee. It's hurting the bee and the bee will die.
Hmm.
So it goes in Friends.
Yeah, this Phoebe person was completely wrong on that. I mean,
yeah, and so she goes through a couple of other examples. And then when we were thinking about this podcast, I was trying to think of altruism in my own life. What mm-hmm. about you? Did you have any thoughts about it?
Well, maybe like for instance, like I'm thinking again in terms of like my wife and I's relationship with our cat. Like if our cat gets sick and we spend hundreds of dollars to cure the cat, then that's altruism? Does that count? We gave up this money just to heal the cat, or you know, but I guess we enjoy the cat's company, so maybe I mean that's what we're getting out of it. Likewise, if the cat brings us the like half of a chipmunk, you know, that she could have probably eaten herself, is that an altruistic act? You know,
yeah, it gets interesting. I had the same thought because as you guys probably know, I am a parent, so I've thought about that with regard to my kids. You know, when you perform. When you think about things that you might do for a family member, oh, mm-hmm. I would totally take a bullet. You know, this is like so common that it's made it into our vernacular. I'd take a bullet for somebody.
Now, the kids wouldn't. The kids are selfish little things, right?
They are pretty egocentric. Kids tend to be for a while. You know, but since it's family, is this an act of altruism if you were to actually take a bullet or, you know, execute one of these quote unquote selfless behaviors? And like you were saying before, it might make me feel good. So say I were to take that bullet, but you know what? I'd feel pretty good knowing that I saved my kid. So maybe I am getting something out of it. And then again, my kid is my family and I'm still getting to pass on my genes. And this gets at a part of altruism that people are thinking, well, I don't know.
Right. And in this, it's kind of like maybe you're feeling good because that's like the biological like reward for doing something that is part of your core programming as an organism to propagate the species, to continue that genetic line, right?
Yeah, certainly my genetic line. We tend to think of survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. This is.
Yeah, which brings to mind like just organisms like, you know, killing each other, beating each other in the head with bones, whatever, just to get
fighting
ahead.
Tooth and nail, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So biologists have really figured out a way around that, the survival of the fittest when it comes to altruism. And specifically, there's a biologist named W.D. Hamilton, and he came up with the idea in the 1960s, and it's called kin selection theory. He's saying, okay, you know what? Maybe there are examples of altruism in the natural world. And, you know, you're going to select for your kin. You might be more willing to perform this behavior if that's your daughter out there or that's your baby bird out there or whatever.
Because deep down, it's all about like, I mean, you're living and you're dying. And in between, you're reproducing and getting that genetic line to continue.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so people have gotten really interested in this whole avenue of research, altruism in the animal kingdom. So there are some social scientists at UC Berkeley who have even gone so far as to call it survival of the kindest.
Oh.
That's kind of nice. Berkeley's getting all touchy-feely.
It wouldn't make for a very good reality series, though. Like, nobody would tune
Survival of the kindest. Yeah, probably not. And they're suggesting that taking care of each other and cooperating ensures the survival of humans or other organisms. And they've even established a Greater Good Science Center.
Which sounds kind of creepy. I mean, just the title, because it kind of brings in like weird connotations of like the greater good science. It sounds like the villainous organization from a science fiction novel.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about some examples of altruism in the animal kingdom. Let's talk about humans first.
Okay. A great example of this is when someone donates a kidney to someone. And if it's an anonymous stranger, I mean, that all the more, right? Because that's not even like a kin thing, you know? Because you see plenty of examples of like, you know, offering up a kidney, et cetera, to, you know, a loved one, a member of the family. But plenty of people just, you know, offer kidneys up to anonymous strangers. You see it all the time.
Well, I don't know about all the time, but more frequently
It certainly makes the news when it happens, I guess.
It does.
Yeah.
Right. So there was a really great article in The New Yorker by Larissa McFarquhar that dealt with this and these anonymous donors who are giving their organs. And there's even been a website founded called matchingdonors.com. And it's this nonprofit org that matches, quote, living altruistic organ donors for patients needing transplants.
Huh.
So as you can imagine, there can be terrific family opposition to say, hey, Dad, do you really need to give up that kidney? What if I need it later?
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating. And, you know, I was also reading, as long as we're talking about organ donation, mm-hmm. that if a family opposes somebody being a deceased family member being an organ donor,
uh-huh.
they can override their wishes.
Like they have so it they're clicked off on their organ donation card that when they die, their organs will be available to transplant?
Right. But if you haven't checked this out with your family, then it can be the organ processing people, the organ transplant centers might be a much better name for them. A lot of times they will defer to the family's wishes if they dissent.
Yeah, I'm.
It's a little bit tangential, but I just thought it was interesting.
I'm all in favor of use them, put them to good use. They're not going to do a lot of good in the ground.
Right. So I'm going off on a little bit on a tangent there, but let's get back on track. There's a more common example, and that's the giving of money.
Right.
So recently there was a big project announced, and it's called the Giving Pledge, and this is spearheaded by 40 U.S. billionaires, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett among them, and they're publicly saying that they're going to donate at least half of their money to philanthropic causes.
Well, that's great.
Altruism at work?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, on one hand, they have all this money, and you could argue, too, it's kind of like if you've got – once you've got so much money, it's like does it hurt to give a certain portion of it away, even half, especially if you're going to get that nice fat tax break, right?
Right.
Not to mention these are guys that are tied with major, corporations and organizations. So it's like, you look pretty good if you go out there and you just give half your wealth away, right?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's one side of it. But on the other, it's like, I'm not going to be completely cynical about it either. Cause I followed some of the stuff that the Gates Foundation does and they do some very good work. So,
Indeed. It seems hard to quibble.
Yeah.
Over that. I don't know if it's altruism, but still they are giving half their wealth away. That leaves a sizable chunk behind.
Yeah, I tend to fall in the category of thinking it's kind of like a little column A, a little column B. It's like it allows you to do something like tax breaks, et cetera. Like it allows you to do something great, but also feel good about it. It's like if I make like a measly, $10 donation to, a different organization or, then on one level, it's like, hey, I feel like I did something good, no matter how, small my part in it for this, charity or organization. But then also I do print it out and put it in a folder because I'm like, hey, I can write that off in the taxes. So it's, I feel like it's probably that kind of a relationship between the two columns with most people. Though some people were probably definitely in one category or the other.
Right. So, cases or instances of pure altruism could be hard to find, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist in some form or another out there in the human kingdom. Okay.
Well, that's why I think like martyrdom is often the ultimate in human culture. Like it's held up as this ultimate example of altruism because it's the idea of giving everything that you are, Or I guess
I tend to think of martyrdom more though as sacrificing yourself for a cause.
Yeah.
Like a belief, an idea, and that may be not what's in the dictionary, but I think it's...
Yeah. Well, but a lot of times that idea though, at least the belief is that idea saves lives or that idea makes the world a better place. Even if in reality it doesn't, I don't know. That's just my thoughts on the matter.
So biologically speaking, we've had some thoughts on this and, a gentleman named Fran DeWall, who's an Emory primatologist and a biologist, is saying, among others, that altruism could come from a sense of empathy we feel when other humans are in distress.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is more, I think, of the fire, somebody's caught in a burning building type of scenario.
Or what is the example in Blade Runner?
Blade Runner?
Well, the whole thing in Blade Runner is they have to do the test to see if the replicant can feel empathy.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
that's
so it's
right.
Like a turtle on a... Sounds like a turtle on a fence post. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen it or read the book.
I just read Do Androids Dream of Electric
Sheep? Is that part in the book? Because they're very different and I can't remember what lines up and what doesn't.
Yeah, there is a crazy empathy test. I can't remember what some of the exact questions are though.
Cool. And then
they all centered on animals.
Yeah.
And whether your response to animals in distress.
Yeah. And there's something too, little kids, up to a certain age, they can't feel empathy really. Again. Selfish little guys, just kids.
So some of the scientists are saying that altruism could be instilled when female mammals are nursing their young. It sounds a little wacky, but DeWall, I was reading this when he was talking about a different book on altruism that he reviewed in the New York Times. So anyway, DeWall is saying that there's a study in which men and women had more empathetic responses in a lab experiment after they were dosed with oxytocin. And this is known as the so-called cuddle hormone.
Oh, yes.
You've heard of the cuddle hormone?
Well, it came up. There was a there's a documentary series called This Emotional Life.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about that.
And there's a whole section that goes into, like, studying some – it doesn't occur in every case, but in some cases of children who've grown up in, like, I believe sort of like Eastern Russian orphanages.
Okay.
Where some of them have – like, it's very – like the children there get a very small amount of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And they've – not all the children, but some of them end up having this this certain pattern of emotional dysfunction, and they've traced it to this particular substance.
So, you know, somebody who might have a lot of oxytocin would be, you know, a breastfeeding woman, or, mm-hmm. you know, you get it when you're going through childbirth, and it's also associated with love and stuff like that. So it is kind of a cuddly hormone. So that's humans. That's, uh-huh. that's a little bit of altruism humans, but what about other animals?
Okay. Well, this instantly comes to mind just from, of course, surfing cute animal pictures online like we all do, where you have instances where, like, oh, the cat just adopted some puppies, or the dog just adopted some kittens.
Yeah, the maternal instinct just overrides everything. And so that's true. It seems like sometimes animals will care for offspring that's not their own, but what's going on there? Could still be an example of that kin selection theory we were talking about a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an interesting squirrel study, red squirrel study,
okay.
that comes to you from compliments of some Canadian researchers at the University of Alberta. And they reported that there are some female red squirrels there that were adopting abandoned baby squirrels.
Okay. Sounds reasonable.
Except the squirrels were related.
Oh, so like... unlike with the cat adopting the puppies, like, they're actually maybe picking up on some sort of genetic similarity between themselves and the young?
Yeah, and that was really what the researchers were trying to figure out. They thought, well, maybe they can tell by how the squirrels are chattering. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some sort of family identifier in that chatting that they're picking up and able to recognize. So, yeah, they were trying to tease out this connection and how the adoptive mom was able to, you know, recognize the genetic link and act on it. It's particularly notable, too, because, you know, we think of there's so many squirrels out there, but they're actually pretty solitary animals.
Are they? Because it seems like they're always chasing each other in my yard.
I know. Yeah. Well, according to this Canadian book. And the other thing is that they're only going to adopt once. They would only perform this behavior once. Otherwise, it's too much of a cost on the existing family. So anyway, they published this research in Nature Communications. I thought it was kind of interesting. So it was altruism by means of kin selection.
Okay. And I just have to throw this in too, you know, talking about like our natural, like we see a baby and we want, on some level, we want to care for it, right?
Some of us do.
Well, I think a lot of us do, but like you see that tied into like how they determine which animals we find cute and which ones we don't.
Yes.
The cuter animals resemble human infants, basically, in terms of their eye structure and all that. That's why I like a kitten, like small head, enormous eyes. People go crazy for it. You could rob a bank with a kitten, you know.
I've never tried to do that.
Yeah, don't try that. But I'm just saying you probably could.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, you definitely think about, well, they've got to be cute because, you know, a kitten, a puppy, a baby to some extent can be an awful lot of work to care for. So, you know, does the cuteness make up for it? Boost their case. Help them survive. Cuteness as a survival factor.
Worth thinking about. But the next animal we're going to talk about isn't really traditionally thought of as that cute, right? Plants. I mean, some plant. I get flowers or, I don't know, I would never classify a plant as cute. I don't know.
No, neither am I. And there hasn't been a whole lot of research done here, but some plants are seemingly able to recognize their kin. How they act on that knowledge is unclear. So examples of altruism in action, we don't really have them. But a step before that would be being able to recognize their kin.
Okay.
Although I suppose if it were a truly selfless plant, it wouldn't matter. And they've also found it in fish.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Cichlids? Is that how you say it? I guess you find these freshwater fish in aquariums.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Mm-hmm.
So I was reading about a study in which subordinate females will raise unrelated offspring. And unlike the squirrels, the instances of the squirrels, there is no genetic link. But these cichlids are getting some benefits when it comes time to reproduce. So again, is this altruism? Well, not if it's necessarily boosting their chances at reproductive success.
And plus on like a large level, it's kind of like the survival of the species, you know, is at stake with a lot of this. You know, it's like if I'm a fish and I adopt a bunch of extra fish, that's more fish out there that are going to potentially be successful, right?
Right. I mean, they don't make sitcoms about, you know, family ties among cichlids, right?
Right.
So good point, Robert.
Or at least, maybe it's been pitched, but it's never,
it just never
they might have
made
produced
it
a pilot, but it didn't get picked up.
And now I have the theme song to Silver Spoon together, but that's a totally different sitcom. Yeah. So anyway, so what about bacteria? This is very interesting.
Yeah, these guys are really not cute. So.
And this is what really prompted my interest in getting Robert to go along with a podcast on altruism. There's a really big finding on it that comes from a study on resistant pathogens that's published in September 2010 edition of Nature, I think September 2nd. And we recently talked in that podcast about quorum sensing, about how it's a mistake to write off bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
They're not simple organisms, by no means.
I think the analogy that I really was proud of in that one is that they're not like, it's not like a kid that only advanced as far as the second grade, but like a kid who like became like the best second grader in the world, you know? Like that's the way I like to think of it, you know? It's like it's in a way it's a lower level on as far as organisms go, but they're really good at that level.
Yeah. Yeah, you would be scared of that second grader.
Yeah.
You'd bow down. You would give them your Twinkie.
Yeah.
So here's what a couple of Boston researchers found out about the latest wonders of bacteria. Specifically, they're from Harvard and Boston University, and they may have stumbled on some altruistic bacteria.
Really?
So what were they doing? They were looking at how antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria develop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they got some strains going on in a bioreactor. They're monitoring, they're controlling, they're doing all of this stuff. And they're not necessarily thinking of altruism. And so the typical scenario we think of when we think of resistant strains, if we do, in fact, think of resistant strains, I imagine some of you guys do, is that, you know, a bacterium has a mutation, protects it against a certain antibiotic, and then that one bacterium survives and it replicates like crazy, and voila, all of a sudden you have this population of antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Right.
Some strain, right? But that's really only part of the story, is what these researchers found out. There's some pretty interesting things that are happening at a population level. Okay, so stay with me here. The Massachusetts researchers were working with E. coli populations in a bioreactor, and they found that resistant bacterium wind up producing a protein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the resistant guys, the ones who are thriving, they wind up producing this protein, and it's called indole. I believe that's how you say it. And the indole helps out weaker members of the population. So they're pumping this stuff out. They're pumping this protein out. And the mechanism of the indole kind of acts a little bit like a steroid. It's helping the weaker bacteria to bulk up and fight off the incoming antibiotics. And it also helps these weaker bacteria to pump the antibiotic out of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so where's the altruism part? Well, the production of indole by those resistant bacteria comes at a cost. It's really, really, really energy intensive.
Okay.
So in human terms, we might say they're sacrificing themselves for the greater good. It's really interesting, though.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm kind of like picturing like the bacteria are like all on like a big camping trip to it with each other. And the one that's become resistant, it's like he's the one that has like all, he's brought plenty of rations for himself. And then everybody else doesn't have enough to eat that night. So he ends up sharing his rations with the other. It's kind of like that level. I was like, he could survive on his own, great, but he's diminishing his own advantage by helping out less privileged bacteria in its surroundings, right?
I guess so. I take the point of view of that, you know, that master camper is really advancing the skills of the lesser campers. Maybe he's like really good at archery and he's showing them how to, you know, better hit bullseyes. You know, he's guiding them. He's showing them how, you know, he's really upping their skills.
Teaching them. Kind of like when the cat brings in half, like a half of a chipmunk for me. She's, because I've heard that like the whole thing is that they're possibly like trying to teach their humans how to hunt, or how, like when they bring in a live animal, they're kind of like, here you go. This is how you can do it. You know, here, chase this chipmunk down, you know?
So another podcast in which the cat gets mentioned. Is this going to be like Seinfeld, in which Superman comes up in every episode and a cat comes up in every podcast?
Probably. I don't know. It's just I was never a cat person until recently. So it's like it brings up just so many questions about the universe. You know, it's like, what is this creature that lives in my house and like climbs through a hole in the wall and like sleeps on the corner of the bed? It's kind of weird. I don't know.
So getting back to bacteria, the the ramifications of this are pretty interesting. Obviously, we want to know what's going on in resistant bacteria. And so indole could be something that we investigate further, this particular protein that the resistant bacteria are pumping out. Maybe we want to target it when we're trying to figure out the next move, when we're battling these antibiotic resistant strains of bacteria. Maybe it's a target.
Yeah. In the war, the ever waging war between humans and bacteria. Well, cool. Do we have some, listener mail to read, don't we?
We do. We keep getting lefties writing in, or righties that like lefties, but mostly lefties and lefty guitarists. So here is an amusing email.
The righties that like lefties are really just lefties writing in. Pretending. They like open extra email accounts to do it. I see right through it.
So here comes one from Heather, and Heather writes, "Hey guys, I just finished listening to the Lefty podcast, and I have an entertaining story about growing up left-handed in a right-handed family. I can relate, Heather. You see, my parents tried to teach me how to tie my shoes for years." This was all capped. Years. "But sadly, if I didn't tie my fingers into the knot, I usually made some sort of squiggly mess, and it would fall apart after a few seconds. So I wore Velcro shoes until a nice old lady that babysat me taught me how to tie my shoes the lefty way."
Huh.
"I was 12.
Wow. You know, I have to interject real quick.
Are you going to talk about Velcro and how wondrous it is?
No, well, this is the thing. When I was a kid, there was one point where I had the Velcro shoes.
Yeah.
And then my parents told me, no, you can't wear Velcro shoes anymore. You need to learn to tie your actual shoes.
Yeah.
Because when you get older, they're not going to have Velcro shoes anymore for adults.
That was a big fat
lie. It was a big
lie,
because now I'll go to this store, I'll be getting some new shoes, and I'll see the Velcro shoes, and I'll be like, I could be wearing those now. I've learned to tie my shoes for nothing, you know? Anyway, but continue.
I had some blue Velcro shoes. They were kind of like sateen, I want to say.
Uh-huh.
And they were great. Got them from Stride Rite.
Just so easy. They don't, like... I still have kind of hate shoelaces because they always come undone. You're dragging them, stepping on them, tripping over them.
Shoelaces can be a fashion statement, Robert. Okay, but getting on to the other listener mail. We had a wonderful leech story sent in by Skylar.
Awesome.
Out of Missouri. And we just got to share this one. Okay, so we did that podcast on leeches a while back. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, does somebody have leeches as pets? So Skylar writes, "Several years ago, I directed a summer camp waterfront with leech-infested waters. Kids would react with terror whenever one of the wriggly creatures got anywhere near them. I decided to keep some in a fishbowl as pets, or mascots, if you will. Overnight, the camper's fear disappeared, and kids would catch little buggers to add to the collection. I was amazed the strategy worked. Sometimes the simplest solutions are the best." That's a question mark, but I agree.
Yeah, send your kids to Camp Blood Leech this summer. It's a great place.
So, he continues, "By the time the season ended, I had grown attached to squirmy little guys, so I brought them back to my college dorm with me." That is interesting. "They required very little care, just a water change every month or so and a feeding every couple months. My friends thought I was a little strange for keeping leeches as pets until I told them about the feeding. Then they thought I was downright disgusting."
Oh, my.
You ready for this?
Yep.
"I would pop a movie in the VCR." He writes,
You got to set the mood, really.
Yeah. Yeah. "So he's popping the movie in the VCR. I like to think it was maybe, you know, Dirty Dancing, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. After all, it was a VCR."
Or he could actually, there's a movie called I Suck Your Blood. Maybe it's that
one. Is
that
like a vampire movie?
Yeah, or Blood Sucking Freaks. Okay. There are no shortage of blood sucking movie titles.
Well, so he has his movie in the VCR. He is ready. He'd kick back with a soda in one hand and the other hand dangling in the leech bowl.
Oh.
"All 28 of the slimy little creatures would attach to various parts of my hand and feast away for about an hour. Then they would drop off and swim away. Allison mentioned feeding them on your finger, but they showed a marked preference for the webbing between."
Oh, wow.
I love this first-person research.
Well, I guess that's probably, I'm looking at that area now in my hand, maybe that's, you know, like, softer?
No, Skylar's philosophy was that he reckons that the skin is thinnest there, and maybe that was why.
Oh, I bet that's it.
"Only downside to the process was the subsequent itching and non-clotting. So anyway, all things go well, and he returns to the camp the next summer, and all 28 leeches were still in good health."
Wow.
"And he released them into the swimming area again, much to the delight of the campers who were looking forward to catching them all over again." So I just thought that was a really
great
story.
And thanks to his breeding, they're like, each one's the size of like a small doll, probably, you know, they're enormous. I kid, but that's awesome. I mean, it's like I love it when somebody has like a like scientific curiosity in something and it goes against the grain. You know, it's like other people may, you know, think it's weird to keep leeches in your room and feed them with your own blood, but those people don't know a lot about leeches. This guy has information because he was brave / crazy enough to actually get out there and keep them as pets.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, as always, we love hearing from you guys. These stories are great. So if you have one you want to share with us, whether it's on leeches or bacteria or altruism, please write us. We're at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yeah. And check us out on the social media. We're on Facebook as Stuff from the Science Lab, and on Twitter you can find us as Lab Stuff. And we will, you know, constantly keep you updated on what we're researching, what we're podcasting and blogging about, and, you know, just what kind of weird science stories we're really into at the moment.
That's all we got. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.